Hello, everyone, and welcome to our second episode of our special coverage on Russia's war against Ukraine. My name is Adam Reichert. I am the editor-in-chief of New Eastern Europe and one of the co-hosts of the Talk Eastern Europe podcast. Today is March 12th, 2022, the 17th day of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The war continues with Russia's advancement slowing to almost a halt as the Ukrainian army and defense forces continue to keep Russian forces from taking Kiev. The most dire situation still remains in Mariupol, where Russian troops have laid siege to the city. There is no electricity, and the citizens are running out of food and water. The Russians continue to target civilian infrastructure, in particular hospitals. In Mariupol alone, this week, we saw a maternity hospital bombed by Russian forces, to the outcry of Ukraine and the international community. There are attempts to arrange humanitarian corridors for the civilian population, but with minimal success, as reports from Ukraine state that Russian forces have not allowed for these corridors to function, adding to the humanitarian catastrophe already brought on by the war. So far, nearly 2 million Ukrainians have fled the country, with 1.5 million crossing the border in Poland alone. What's more, reports from Friday, March 11th, indicated that Belarus is preparing to use its military in Ukraine, which could bolster the flailing Russian forces. President Zelensky has also stated that there are reports that Russia is trying to recruit foreign fighters, particularly from Syria and other countries. Today, in this episode, I sit down with Olga Koncevich, the editor-in-chief of the web portal 24tv.ua, which is the online website for the large Ukrainian TV station 24. We talk about the situation throughout the country, what her contributors are reporting, as well as the humanitarian situation, the corridors, and, of course, the situation with Belarus and the challenge of nuclear security. So, Olga, thank you again for being here with us during these, of course, extremely difficult times. As the editor-in-chief of an online portal, which is quite large, actually, you have contributors all over the country. And I'm just curious, maybe you could share with us what some of your contributors are saying. What are they hearing on the ground? What does the situation look like for the people who you work with?
Yeah, thanks for having me here also, because it's very important to talk about Ukraine during this war and in these hard times. If we talk about our editorial board, so we have an office in Kyiv. We closed it during the first days because it was very hard to report. We all remember this effects and the bombing on Kyiv in the first days of war, but now we open it for small operations, just to take some stuff, some cameras, some equipment, and then go to the streets for shooting or for making some reports. Also, we have our TV editorial board in Lviv. We relocated all TV presenters to Lviv because of security measures and also because of some connection issues. We want to have this constant connection with people. We want to make streams and so on. It's much easier in Lviv because even if we hear some sirens and alarms, anyway, we could make our reports more easily than in Kyiv. And also we have reporters in Kharkiv and nearby this occupied territory, we have some volunteers in Mariupol, for example, this occupied city that now very loud because of a Russian attack. So anyway, we've got many people all around Ukraine and have this opportunity to have this information from the host hands about the war and so on. But when we talk about some journalists that are situated in eastern part of Ukraine, it's harder to connect with them. So yeah, now after these 2 weeks of war, even more, we know that sometimes if you can't connect with someone, maybe it's just the battery is low or something else. But during the first days, it was very harmful because, many thoughts was on your mind. Sometimes you thought that maybe it's something happened or maybe this particular reporter is dead or something else. But now we know that it's just because of this situation with occupation and so on. Sometimes just journalists can't be on stream or something else. So it's much easier because we get used to it. It's maybe sounds horrible, but now when you are in stress so long time, you starting just to live in this situation like it always was in like usual. So
wow. So I imagine that, like, even just the passage of time for you, it just doesn't even register right now. Yes, like yesterday or 2 days ago could be like almost a week ago. It must be really difficult.
Yeah, it feels like this war lasts for 1 year or two years, and especially during these first days, you didn't even like feel this time. It just like went somewhere away, and then you just up your head and understand, oh yeah, it's like maybe I'm near my laptop maybe for 20 hours, maybe I need to sleep or something else. So, but now I also see that my colleagues, they try to divide their time for some slots, and I see that they understand that they need to share this day time for some normal periods. For example, they need to sleep, they need to eat something, they need to not to work for this 15-16 hours. So I guess that now we just like we adapted to this situation.
And you mentioned some of the areas. We see a lot of reporting. I think which is actually incredible is that the world is seeing a lot of what's happening in Ukraine. That the Russians have not been able to block any information really coming out. We see, of course, Mariupol, as you mentioned as well, is the city that's probably the most under siege right now and in the most serious situation. But I'm curious, you mentioned you also have some colleagues in East Ukraine. This is one of the areas which we hear less about. Can you speak a little bit more what it looks like in the eastern part of where there was, you know, the occupied territories, and have the Russians come further into Ukraine on the eastern side? How does it look like from what you're hearing from your colleagues?
This is the hardest part because it's like the blank sheet for us. We don't know like exactly what is happening there. But for example, we have colleagues who was born in Donetsk or Lugansk, these occupied cities since 2014. So they also have some school teachers, maybe some friends, some family members who sending them some information. And during this war, they also sent us some messages, some information about the situation. For example, as we understand, sometimes they just kidnapping people from some like organizations that supported Ukrainians. They tracked them through Facebook, Instagram, and other social networks. And during these war times, they began to arrest them and trying to find some new information about Ukrainian army, about our defenders, and so on. For example, one of my colleagues, sent me a picture of his school teacher who was like spreading in closed social networks groups some Ukrainian lozenges about the importance of Ukraine, of sovereignty, of integrity of Ukraine. And this separatists, they found him, and now he is arrested, and we are trying to find some information with connected with Ministry of Defense, with intelligence team, just to find out what happened and what like what is the destiny of this school teacher, because we're afraid of him. We get that all people who supported Ukraine, even if it wasn't like official, because it was very dangerous to be loud about this. Yeah,
right.
But it's the biggest danger is for just simple people who couldn't leave this territory because of some reasons, because of grandmother or some health issues and so on, and they stayed there. And now these separatist groups, they try to find these people and make some pressure on them.
That sounds terrible. It's like a complete totalitarian or even terrorist state right now in those parts. How about Western Ukraine? I mean, you mentioned that most of the colleagues from your media, they moved to Lviv, yes? So we know that it seems kind of safer, but there have also been some strikes in Western Ukraine. Can you just speak a few words of what the situation looks like in the western part of the country?
Yeah, I need to clarify that also we relocate some people not only on the west of Ukraine, but also in the center part of Ukraine, like Zhytomyr, Vinnytsia region, and so on. And it was not also very safe because they every day they also hear these sirens and so on. But anyway, like biggest part, on Western Ukraine, and maybe you heard that yesterday it was 11th of March. It was like the second huge attack on Western territories because your Russians bombed aircraft facilities near Ivano-Frankivsk and near Lviv. There were also huge explosions, and it was unexpected because they didn't do it since the first days of war. And people there, they were calm, and they thought that maybe if they are near the border with Poland and other EU states, everything will be okay. But anyway, we see that Putin doesn't care. He thinks that maybe he could bring this mess all around the Ukraine. So for him, it's like normal to bomb even a western part near the border with EU states.
And in fact, a lot of people have fled, the eastern parts or Kiev and Kharkiv, and they've moved to one of the stories we talk about here, of course, is the million and a half, almost 2 million people who have left Ukraine, but internally there's a lot of displaced people as well. I think that's something that we don't think about, right? It's probably several million people have moved to the west of Ukraine. And I don't know if cities like Lviv, Ivano-Frankivsk, Uzhhorod can actually, if there's space for these people as well.
Yeah, Lviv pleaded that they also have some problems, that they couldn't even accept these people because of this situation. But also, I get that maybe if the situation will be better, people will come back to Ukraine and to their cities, because no one wants to be in other country, because people had their own life here in Ukraine. They had their own apartments, their own businesses, and so on. It's the question is not to be in EU or stay there. The question is just to be safe. So that is why some women with children, they try to find some safe place. But I guess that maybe if Putin will stop, if everything will be okay in near future, these people will come back to their homes. So, but anyway, yeah, I get that the main pressure is on Western Ukraine because it's very hard for them to provide too many assistance for these people. And you couldn't compare it with tourists, because tourists, they have their own money and so on. You don't need to provide them with some food or medicine aid. But when we talk about some people who spent 20, 24 hours, sometimes few days on a road, they need this support. For example, these children who also affected by this war. So I understand this fear of mayor of Lviv and others. They can't manage this situation, but I guess that now they need to unite their forces and to help these people. It's also their goal to be useful during these times. Mm. So
yeah.
I guess that they could manage.
And similar to this, staying on the topic, there was some discussions about the humanitarian corridors last week, which some of the negotiations between Ukraine and Russia were to allow for some humanitarian corridors to open up for aid to reach these people and for some of these people to escape if they could. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts when you saw these discussions, and how do you assess like the effectiveness of these humanitarian corridors? Was it actually something that that worked, or I mean, I've read mixed reports that the Russians actually did not really open up these corridors.
Yeah, during even the first round of talks, like all my thoughts were about these green corridors for civilian people, because it's like the main question. You could discuss these like political issues like later, but now we need this safety for people. And we know that today in the morning Russians understood that they need to open this corridor from green corridor from Zaporizhia to Mariupol. It means not evacuation, but just to opportunity to provide some medical support, some food, and some basic stuff for people, just to let this car in on the territory of Mariupol. So now we're just observing the situation. We don't even know how it would end, but maybe everything will be okay. I hope so. I do hope, because it's like now it's the most important thing to give people some basic products and medicine.
Yeah.
But we observed that during maybe all this last week, when Ukrainian army or some even international organizations tried to reach some city that, as Russians said, could accept this help, and they said that they will stop shooting, but they broke this promise many times. It was unexpected also for Ukrainians and for international staff, because they also were in danger. Then they tried to provide this help even during this shooting. For example, we observed in Kyiv region, in small villages around the Kyiv that were blocked for almost this 2 weeks. It's not only like few days. You can imagine when you don't have any opportunity to recharge your mobile phone, and no one can hear any word from you. Sometimes also some families, they thought that maybe their parents or friends are dead, and it was like the most like horrible thing. We know that tanks, Russian troops, they were on the streets, then they shoot it in people like in the distance of I don't know 2 steps, and they knew that it is like a peaceful civilian people, but they still shoot it, and it was like very harmful, because our Ukrainian army or some activists, they couldn't do nothing, because this area was blocked. And I guess that maybe today's like example with Mariupol will show this attitude of Russians. Do they like prepare to provide these green corridors in such difficult situation with such a big city? Because Mariupol is quite a big city. We couldn't compare it with some areas in Kyiv region. Or they rather like will make some new provocation to create some new propaganda news or something else. So we'll see. But anyway, we hope that people will survive and they will provide some corridors for them. But yeah, it's like the most important question, just to provide these green corridors.
Especially for Mariupol, as you said, the situation is really, really dire and the people need assistance or to escape. One of the last things I want to ask you about is Belarus, because yesterday there was information that there would be some provocation, that actually Russian Air Force would attack a village in Belarus, and this would give Lukashenko the kind of the opportunity to declare that Belarus is officially entering the war and start sending in Belarusian troops to invade Ukraine. Has there been any information about that? Because the rumor was yesterday that around 9 p.m. they would actually start activities, but I haven't heard anything since then. What are you hearing?
Yeah, we had some information and we knew that maybe officials also published this information just to protect Ukraine, just to show if something will happen, they have evidence that they heard about this. But now we know that it was since the first day of war, Belarus was like passage station for Russians. They just sent this equipment, weapon and so on through the territory on air. And still it's a very big issue because it's the territory for Russian army where they could bring their forces together and then attack Ukraine with the next wave. But also I guess that another big issue is this nuclear security, because in Ukraine more than 15 nuclear power plants, and it's very a big issue because it's not about the security of Ukraine. It's also about the security of all the Europe and about the world security. And it's also a terrorism act when Russian troops just occupied Chernobyl or Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. I also need to mention that it's maybe even more important than Belarusian support to Russia or something else, because I'm also afraid of this nuclear war more than this Belarusian attack on Ukraine. I get that Putin could terrorize the world by this issue, and maybe it will be more powerful than to send this old equipment from World War II as he did it last time. So.
Okay, Olga, the last thing I just wanted to ask, if there's any message that you would like personally to share with the world coming from your perspective.
Yeah, I guess that my message would be maybe I will address it mainly to Russians, because I guess that now they can't accept many information about Ukraine because of closing the oppositional channels and because of propaganda. But I want to say that people, look, it's not only the problem of Ukraine or some other country. It's not about the polarization of the world. It's not about the US and Russia competition. It's all about our future. And anyway, we all will live in this world, and we need to make this place safe. And if someone will tell you that this is just a simple crisis and maybe it's like a special operation, it is not. It's war. And if you compare some facts and if you will read some information from different sources, you will understand it. And just if you support Ukraine, go on the streets, be loud about this. And if everyone will say their word, the world will be safe and Putin will stop. But since someone or all of Russians are silent, the danger is still here. So be loud, be specific, try to name the right terms. It's war, it's not an operation. And please help and support not only Ukraine, but support your own freedom and your own future.
Olga, thank you so much for your perspective and for your time. We are all with you, and we are still all doing as much as we can to stop this war and to stop the killing and stop the violence. And we pray that it ends as fast as possible. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.